Dan Bublitz Comedy Productions.
Go back to college. That's what's coming up on the Art of Bombing, episode 267.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to an all-new episode of the Art of Bombing podcast. It is me, the host, Dan Bublitz Jr., and with me, as always, is my co-host, co-producer, and cohort, Josh Shirley. How are you, Josh?
Spring break's not what it used to be, Dan. I'll tell you that.
Oh, is that a fact?
Uh-huh.
Spring break probably had you waking up, you know, the next day, you know, after a drinking night in your clothes without a name tag.
That's right. That's what it used to be like. And now, so the questions I used to get on spring break were like, hey, man, are you guys going to be at the Ramada? Like, are you going to be on South Padre? Or are you staying like in Brownsville and driving over? That's what it used to be. And now it's, hey, are you going to be at the, like, what time are you going to be at the indoor playground? When are we going to walk around in our socks together waiting for this all to be over?
Wow, that was grim. When are we going to be waiting for it to all be over?
Damn. Yeah, for us to go home and not have to watch our kids at this place. Like, we got to find something inside to do. It's 31 degrees. And then you got to find out something to do with your kids, like, yeah, while they're here. And you take work off because you don't, you know.
Yeah,
you have kids home.
You have to, yeah, you have to be there for your kids during spring break. That's what I thought you were gonna say when you're like, spring break used to be, you know, drinking, blah blah blah, and now Exactly. It's, are you available to babysit?
Yeah, no, it's, oh my god, I get to go to work today. Yes, that's what it's like now. That's what happens, everybody.
Yeah, the beauty of getting older. Oh man, that's funny. I don't know, how was your weekend? Did you have a good? I had a great weekend. I did a corporate I did a bunch of shows, a corporate included, and I would like to just say working with Adam was fantastic. If you listen to last week's episode, you know that I was getting ready to do a bunch of shows with Adam over the week and the weekend, and they were great. Adam was a fantastic comedian, as you probably could tell if you listened to that episode. But watching him live was amazing. Really great comedian and super, super nice. So that was a fun little time. And then I did a corporate gig over the weekend. I got to do fancy stuff, you know. I got to stay in a nice hotel. I got to have a nice dinner at their event. It was pretty fun. Only thing is I didn't know it was a Roaring Twenties themed event, so
oh, no.
I was a little.
So you showed up. Well, you showed up in the 20s, like just your 20s.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was still dressed nice because I knew it was a corporate gig, so I still brought a sports jacket. But I probably could have dressed more to the theme had I known that. Yeah.
You were like, oh, the 1920s. Whoops. Like, I feel like you've got like a pocket excuse for that party. Like for the next 7 years.
Yep.
Like you can show up to a 20s themed cocktail hour as is and get away with it.
That's right. I mean, to be fair, I look like I, you know, most of the times I look like I'm 12. So I dress like I'm 12. So I
yeah.
Get so away with
cocktails.
It.
It was tails, tuxes, and tiaras.
And I was wearing the tiara.
There you go.
It was funny, though. I did make a joke about that, like, later in the set, how I didn't get the memo that it was a Roaring Twenties themed night. And I said that had I known, I would have dressed up, and I would have worn my best flapper's dress. Not gonna
yeah, there you go. Nice one.
Got a pretty good chuckle. Oh, man. Yeah, today on the podcast, though, we do have a great show for you. Today on the podcast, our guest is Gary Lewis, who is a comedian based in Sioux City, Iowa, of all places. Has been doing comedy. I mean, he has moved around a little bit here and there throughout his career, but I mean, his career spans over 30 years, and most of it seems like it was spent in the Midwest. This guy is like a legendary road dog. He had lots of great stories about being, you know, working the road and things like that. So that's what's going to be coming up on the podcast today. I'm very excited about this conversation. What about you, Josh?
I am as well. This is a great conversation. He's got, you know, 40 years of experience.
Yeah.
In comedy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's older than, you know, according to our data, most of the people listening to this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, let alone how long you've been doing comedy. And so we, you know, in proportion to that career, we get a lot of bonus material in terms of his experiences. So he doesn't just have one bombing story. He's got like a bombing series.
Yeah, exactly. And then afterwards, after the fact, he told me that he forgot to tell me a story. He's like, well, I guess maybe we'll just have to have a part two. So,
right. Right.
Yeah. And it was great because I've been meaning to have him on for a while, and we tried to arrange it to do it in person. He wanted to do it in person originally. And I totally agreed. I thought that would be way better. And so we've been trying to do this for the last few years. And anytime I was like in his area, it just, our scheduling just didn't align to do it in person. Finally just decided to do it, you know, remotely. And I'm glad that we did, because it was great to have him on the podcast. And he hit a career milestone. I'm just going to throw this out there. I can't remember if we talked about it in the recording or if we talked about it before we started recording, but this was his first podcast guest appearance.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was pretty awesome.
He does make mention of it in the show, but yeah, you're right. It's worth mentioning twice.
It is.
How do you go that long?
Yeah, exactly. A career
without being on a
30
podcast.
Plus years, not on a podcast. That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we should get into this conversation with Gary. So let's do this. Here is our conversation with Gary Lewis. Enjoy.
And now it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
You got not even engaged.
Woo!
In what?
How long have you been engaged?
Three months.
Did you look? When are you getting married?
July 20th.
Oh, no, woman answers. That's when the rules set up. Yeah, you're engaged, all right. You might want to stretch that fucker out a little bit longer, though. That's my advice. Get engaged, man. Stay engaged, though, man. I love being engaged. I get engaged on a regular basis. It's happy times. The thing I love is you can make that engagement last forever. Engagements can last for as long as you want them to last. To me, engaged is the E word. The E word can last as long as you want it to last, but the E word leads to
M
word, absolutely right, which more often than not leads to
the
D word, which leads me paying the A word, and the C word was the F word over and over again. Love that. It's not good for Gary. I'm going to be 50 years old. I'm single. I've never been married. Of course, my dad's starting to wonder if I'm not the smartest son of a bitch that ever walked.
It's the art of bombing.
So this has been a long time coming. We've been trying to do this for a while. We were hoping to do it in person, and it just never worked out. Anytime I was in the Sioux City area, just schedules just didn't work. But here we are.
There's just so much to do when you're in Sioux City that they just had the Weekender's Choice Award, our big newspaper. We had our Choice Awards, and I was lobbying hard for tourist destination here in Sioux City. but I didn't even get nominated, man.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but this has been a long time coming. I'm glad glad we're finally doing it.
I'm excited. I'm excited to have you finally, because you've been doing comedy a long time, so I can't wait for some of these stories. But we were talking when kind of scheduling, setting things up, you said you're still kind of recovering from the long COVID.
That sucks,
obviously, but how's that coming?
I'll tell you what, man. I would go back and do 2 weeks of actual COVID all over again. Just if it meant that I didn't have to go through what I've gone through the last 6 months with the long COVID.
Oh.
The long COVID is crap, man.
I can about imagine. There's another friend of mine who's also a comic who got COVID really bad. He almost died. He was in the hospital for like 2 months, and then he had to go through a bunch of like physical therapy and do all these things afterwards. And he's still suffering from, you know, lingering effects. And this was back in 2020.
And they're dealing
with stuff.
There are a lot of people that are dealing with really harsh stuff. People that got the COVID before the vaccines came out, which yep. I got the vaccine as soon as it came out. And I got COVID last August. And I had what you'd have to, I describe as a mild case.
Mm-hmm.
I kept thinking, yeah, this sucks, but I've been sicker, you know?
Yeah.
So I had a mild case and I was like, I'm going to kick this shit in 5 days. And I did. I tested negative, and I just never got better.
Oh, that's weird.
It just kept hanging on. Something new every week. It changed. It intensified. It just got nuts.
Hmm. Well, you look good. If that's any consolation,
you know, that is a great thing to say on a video.
I know, right? I can see you. That's all that matters.
Right.
Yeah, I just, it's better for me to have a conversation if I can see you. I don't do much with video, but that's so we can see each other.
I don't hear that very often. It's better for me to have a conversation if I can see you. I'll take that. I don't hear that a lot.
That better go in your bio. It's your new intro.
Right on.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, I suppose with, you know, all this that you've been kind of going through with the health and stuff, have you been doing any shows, or have you done any shows lately, or have you been kind of taking a step back?
I've stepped back quite a lot, Dan. With my transportational issues and all that, it was time to step back, regroup, do some writing, do some trying to push my creativity in other directions.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
Which is my way of saying I can't drive to fucking gigs.
Well, I guess if you can't drive to other gigs, you got to kind of take a step back.
Got to do what you can do, man.
Yep, exactly. Well, and it's good, though, that there's other creative outlets, because you do quite a bit just in Sioux City with things, too, that I watch from afar. You have your annual contest that you were doing, and you were doing shows as well that you're producing and stuff, and you're involved in I assume theater and stuff, because don't you do an annual Christmas fundraiser show too? And
yeah, every year we do something called a Very Gary Christmas, and we call it that because it rhymes. and I get whoever. I mean, I want it to be like a talent show, you know.
Yep.
Like I'm Carol Burnett, you know, whatever. And whatever, anybody's got, you know, like a poem they want to read, belly dancers, it doesn't matter. Come do my Christmas show, and we raise money for the soup kitchen and the homeless shelter, because I'm going to need some place to live and some place to eat. So I'm planning for the future, man. I'm an old road comic. I know I haven't got no palatial estate waiting for me.
That's quite the retirement plan.
Hey, man, you can't say I don't got one, though.
No, not at all. That's you're doing some forethinking there.
I don't hear that all the time either.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, let's get into this. I love hearing stories about, bombing on the road, when shows go bad. Not even bombing all the time. I mean, just bad shows. And I'm sure, like I said, you've been doing comedy for a very, very long time. You've seen some things.
Get one more very in there, man. Very,
you've been Jesus, very, very, been very long time.
Jesus. You remember that first joke? I do. I wrote it. I don't care what he said. So, yeah, I've been doing it a long time.
Yeah, that's for sure. So I'm sure you have a lot of great stories. No. So well, there's no. So what I want now is for you to tell me a story of a show that.
The problem is that I started in the 80s. So all great memories and all great stories were automatically erased. They're gone. It was the 80s. It was the 90s, man. It just happened. And maybe I should have told you that before I agreed to do a podcast about memories.
Right? Yeah. I just
wanted to seem like somebody for a little while. I wanted to be on one of them podcast deals. This is my first one, you know.
Wow. I'm honored that this is that you saved yourself for me.
Yeah, it was exactly like that. I'm ethical and moral. I did prank call Bill Blank and Jaredog one time on their podcast. I don't think that counts as being a guest, though.
That's funny.
Yeah, a long time. Yeah, lots of bombs. So my very first open mic, I would have to say, was kind of a bomb.
Yeah.
My very first time I stepped on stage in Sioux City. Anywhere as a, to present myself as a stand-up comic was at a place called Kenny's Comedy Corner. Was the comedy night at a bar called Donovan's Reef at the Imperial 400 Motel, which boasted a rotating heart-shaped bed with mirrors on the ceiling.
Oh,
it was
wow.
It was a classy place to start a career, man. I was fresh out of basic training. My mom told me that there was a thing called open mic at this place. And I'd been doing talent shows in college and high school and stuff like that. You know, I'd been doing talent shows and I had no idea what stand-up comedy was, but I went down there with I had props at the time and God help me, I can't even remember what the hell they are. But I went down there and I did my little act, which consisted of Stephen Wright jokes and Bill Cosby jokes.
Oh no.
You know, talent show. I didn't really know.
Yeah, you didn't know exactly.
No, I was a young, stupid boy from Northwest Iowa. And hey, you know what? I don't remember the audience hating me, but some of the comics, it took a long time for them to warm up to me. And Kenny Muller, the guy who owned the place, afterwards came up to give me my $5 cut of the door. He said, very, very politely, just said, go back to college. That pissed me off.
So, yeah, right? So you're like, challenge accepted.
Yeah, man, I came back every week. And then, yeah.
And all downhill since then. Wow. So you've pretty much, your whole career, you've pretty much been in Sioux City. Is that fair to say? Or have you?
I started out here.
Oh, okay.
Then I migrated down to Omaha for a little while. I lived down there in the mid-80s. Where I got involved with the Omaha Comics, the Omaha Comedy Shop. And somehow or another, I ended up being the guy that ran the open mic comedy night for the Omaha Comedy Shop at Howard Street Tavern.
Okay.
And down on Howard Street. And it was, what a great time. Actually, I have one of my show-stopping stories about bombing. At the open mic at Howard Street Tavern. You want to hear that one?
Oh, I do. Absolutely.
I was still a Sioux City comic. I hadn't moved down there yet. And, dude, I was, you know, it was the 80s. We were making this shit up as we went along, you know? It was all clear. When I started on the road, we were going to towns that had never seen a stand-up comic outside of, you know, Johnny Carson. You know?
Yep.
So here I was. I'm traveling down to Omaha. And to me, Omaha's a big city, right? And I'm up on stage. And I don't even remember what the bit was. I don't even remember why I said it. In retrospect, now after all these years, because this was back in 85, 84, something like that. I don't know. I realized that I made a mistake by using the R word. Maybe you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, right? I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Sure. And I had my friend Ron Osborne, the Oz, was holding a tape deck because I was recording my show with a tape deck, just a regular audio tape deck. And I guess there was some woman that wanted to say something in my tape deck while I was on stage. And she started leaving. And from the back of the room, I heard her say, "If you ever make fun of retarded people again, I will find out who you are and I will have you killed."
Jeez.
Not, I'll kick your ass. Not, I'll kill you, or I'll mess you up. I will have you killed.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah.
Well, we did you listen? Though. I was going to say, did you listen back to that and then hear that and just be like, whoa?
No, Ron told me about it, and I could hear her. She was yelling it from the back of the room. I was on stage. I could hear her say it.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. It stopped. It stopped whatever ridiculous crap I was doing at the time.
It's interesting to me because, you know, back then things like that were a little more acceptable. You know, like now, using the R word is definitely, it's very frowned upon now, along with a lot of other trigger words. And it's considered punching down. But back then, it seemed like people could get away with a lot more. So I'm surprised that somebody actually, even back then, was like, no, this ain't happening.
Well, you know, in most cases when stuff like that happens in a show, there's a story that happened before she even got there.
Oh,
there's
absolutely.
Something, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't know that at the time. I just thought she wanted to flirt with me on my tape deck. And when she just, yikes, I will have you killed.
Well, she either hasn't heard you use the word again or you stopped using it because you're still here. So.
I think that was the first in doing that story was the first time I've used that word since. I believe it was the first time I've ever even thought that word.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty intense when people get real crazy with that kind of stuff and how they react too. I mean, that's, pretty extreme. I'll have you killed. Or even if they were like, I will kill you or I will fight you.
That's what I, yeah.
Any of those things is still pretty extreme.
Right? Yeah. I'll fuck you up. I will have you killed. That shows knowledge and intent.
Yeah.
And ability to carry out. I mean,
that's very threatening.
Right?
I mean, if I was listening back to a recording and heard somebody say something like that, I'd be worried. I'd be like looking over my shoulder.
And I wonder what happened to that recording. I used to have a whole bunch of tapes that I just recorded, back like we would with for TikTok now.
Well, yeah.
Cassette tape versions of TikTok that are just gone because I'm me. I lose shit like that.
Well, and over when you're, for carrying stuff around for a long time, it's easy to lose shit over time. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's hard to just keep everything. I mean, you would have so much stuff.
But tapes, those were like gold back in the day. Those things were gold.
That's amazing to me that even back then, the comics were thinking about that. As soon as tape decks, kind of came out, it's like, oh, well, I'm going to tape my set with a tape deck,
so that way I can listen to it at home or on the way back to Sioux City or whatever. Yeah. I started with a big regular size cassette player recorder. Yep. I went down to the macros and man, those were fun when you were, back in the day, seeing somebody, a hippie like me, talking into his hand, the little micro. Yep. I can play that up, and man, it made getting pulled over so much more interesting,
I don't know. I think it would be a lot funnier though if when you got pulled over, instead of the Mac, you're talking into a giant tape box,
right?
Tape recorder.
For the longest time, not a reel to reel or anything like that. No,
I know what you're talking about.
Let's
get
retro and do that.
Right. I mean, now if you did that, if you recorded like an album like on tape like that reel to reel, that'd be a hip thing to do.
They'd probably go for it. Who's the comic book of this shit? It's reel to reel.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. Everybody be all in on that. Oh, I love that. It's well, and that's interesting too, because going back to what you're talking about with recording and you've seen all this technology change. That's got to be pretty interesting from a comedian standpoint too, from going from using these giant tape recorders to now our cell phones can,
It took me a long time to actually grasp the power of this little machine that's sitting here in front of me, the things I could do with it,
Yeah.
Because even getting back in the 80s or 90s, trying to get a good videotape, VHS tape was just, it was for me, it was if I got a tape out of a show, it was a dead show. It was a bad show. I bombed or so, you know, or something went wrong. If it was a good show, something happened and it didn't get videotaped. So,
You know what? That's funny that you say that, because that's something that we have in common. Because that's something that I feel very strongly about, that anytime I'm trying to record it, like if I want to do an audition and I know the camera's going, I end up, might not be a complete bomb, but I screw something up and then it's not worth submitting, right? And
because then, video camera automatically becomes that one booking agent that just won't hire you no matter what the fuck you do.
Yep. And then if I'll have a really good set and then realize I forgot to hit record or something stupid happens.
It's something stupid
forgot my tripod, battery was dead, couldn't set up the camera, whatever it is, and then I'll have just a great set. So and I've talked about it on other episodes of this podcast, now I'm just in the habit, I just record every, I just got a little video camera and I try to videotape everything when I can, just so now I'm not nervous when I'm just used, it's part of my procedure to get ready for a show, setting up my camera and, you know, being ready for that. But going back to that, what you're talking about, trying to get a good tape back then, because I remember as a kid, you know, I remember this kind of technology. Not everybody could just go get a camera. Like now, everybody, you have a cell phone, you have a camera on your phone.
Yep.
Or you can go get a cheap little camcorder for a couple $100. But back then, they were very
expensive. VHS cameras, you were like the sports guy for your local television, you know, walking around with one of these big VHS cameras.
Yeah.
And you needed the full-size tripod.
Yeah.
And, it was a pain in the ass to carry that stuff around.
Something like that. Did you have, like, you know, did you just go buy your own equipment, or would you guys pay somebody to come in and try to tape, or how did they do that back then with that?
One time I tried to get here in Sioux City way back in the day, I tried to get my first tape. I was trying to get my first tape to send out to agents and stuff. So, we decided to do a charity show at Pepperoni's Comedy Club at Alfredo's Pizza. So we decided on Sunday night. What's that? What are you laughing?
I'm laughing at that because so Jackie Cation headlined Snow Jam Comedy Festival.
Right.
She was confused about Sioux Falls. She kept talking about this place you were talking about because she headlined there like 25 years ago. And she kept thinking it was in Sioux Falls. And then she finally realized, I think somebody said something that they don't remember this place, and then it clicked that it was Sioux City, not Sioux Falls.
But she was depressed. Damn it.
But yeah, that's why it made me giggle, because it, I'd never heard of this place until Jackie said something. So it's funny that you're talking about it.
For a while, that was the club in the, it was a great club.
That's
it,
awesome.
It really was. They banned me in the early 90s, but it was a great club.
You know? What did you get banned for?
You know, that's not worth going into.
Fair enough.
I can't afford legal people.
You're like,
you know?
I got history. Leave it at that.
So we tried to do a charity show there for Children's Miracle Network. I advertised it. I got the TV stations to talk to me and pipe it up a little, pump it up a little bit. I brought in some guy that I think it was like $35. That's all he wanted was $35 to make the tape for me. And man, we did everything right to promote this show. Everything right. And I think we had like 10 people in the audience.
Oh, wow.
And at the end of the night, I only had like $30 to give to Children's Miracle Network.
I was like,
really? Like, you know what? I'm just going to hold on to this, you know, for like food.
Oh, no.
And I had to wait until several years later when I could write a check for $250 for them just out of my pocket. So.
Yeah. Wow. Was that like one of the first shows you tried to promote?
Well, we see,
or
it was a long time ago, but no, actually we were, I thought about this a lot when I watched the young comics here book their shows, you know, and all over, we were doing the same kind of thing back then, but there was nothing, there was no, there was no real diagram. There was no real how to do it. Nobody had been doing it.
Yeah.
Like I said, we were going to bars in towns that had never seen live people. Teeth jokes were funny back then because they were all pretty freaking new. But
yeah,
you know.
Well, and also you got to figure too. Back then, you didn't have social media, so like trying to promote
like this,
shows,
man.
Is you either you know you had like going out and actually talking to people, putting up flyers,
or you knew
and
what
radio.
You knew which light post to put a flyer on. You knew somebody in radio, whatever. Yeah, it was tough. But yeah, we had guys back then. Some of these names will mean nothing to you, but we had Gent Monk and Don Reese and Rob Noxious.
Don Reese, I've heard that name.
Yeah. I should have saved him for last. He's the freaking headliner. Gent Monk was one of the Sioux City comics that did fantastic for himself. But yeah, we had Rob Noxious and Ron Osborne, the Oz out of Omaha, a show I booked up in Lamar's for MDA. Well, mm-hmm. Muscular dystrophy, of course. My name's Gary Lewis. I'm going to milk that crap for all I can. So, yeah, we did book our own shows a little bit. But then after a while, it just became kind of there are people to do that for us and get us gigs. And the first part of my career, I had somebody doing all my booking for me, and I've never really gotten used to not having that.
I'm sure that's got to be a hard thing to if because you get spoiled, you know, if you have that, you know, early on, it's hard to try to do that yourself. Because even it's somebody I've never really had representation of any sort. Nobody's going out until now. I do have somebody that's helping me do some corporate stuff, book some corporate stuff. But even then, it's like I got to do it. So it's like weird to be like hands off. But I can't imagine what it would be like if, you know, somebody else was doing it the whole time and then have to be like, well,
I was lucky when that arrangement stopped in that I had a lot of bookers that would still book me. I didn't have to do the song and dance. I didn't have to convince them. I had to pay the damages most of the time, but they would usually book me out.
Oh, I love it. Well, I want to talk a little bit. Let's get into some nuts and bolts of comedy because you've got a lot of great stories, and I'm sure you got a lot of great insight into comedy. I'm curious, like over the years, like when you have a bad set, like what do you try to look for? And I mean, you've been recording your sets early on, so I'm sure you've listened back. And like, what do you kind of look for to try to see what happened and then figure out how you can prevent it next time?
No, you can't. I think I maybe have gone through that phase a long time ago where I'd even watch the videotapes or listen to the tapes. I don't, even if I had them now, I don't think I'd listen to them. Mm-hmm. It's just because it's happened. It's what happened. That will never happen again. You'll never have that one magic fucking heckler that just has all the right answers. You know, I forgot to ask, am I free to speak with my
Yeah, you're
chosen.
Fine. You're fine.
All right. Okay.
You're fine. I'm sure what anything you say is never. It's I'm sure somebody else has already said it on the podcast when it comes to bad words.
Right, right. I've got one word that I just let fly with. And, you know, I got so used to doing radio that radio interviews that I rarely ever said fuck on the radio. So
only once in a while.
Yeah. But, you know, it reached a point, you know, that I was doing it long enough. I'd been doing it long enough that, man, I know what bits work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just because I'm in front of a crowd of people that all of a sudden don't like that bit, don't like me, get through it, try your damnedest to win them over, find something in somebody that's leading this surge against you, whatever, that you can pal up with them. But, yeah, I can't. My dad, like, I have a bit about that. My dad told me, you can't make everybody laugh. My dad said, this is the bit. My dad said, you can't make everybody laugh because people are different. People are unique. People are like snowflakes, cold, flaky, and hard to shovel when piled up.
That's great.
Thanks.
Oh, I love it. That's a great one. But what about like when you do you... Well, let's go into this. kind of like your writing process? Like, how has that kind of changed over the years? You know, like when you're working on a.
I have no writing process. I have notebooks this size. I have notebooks of this size. This is that size, but I've got notebooks all over the damn place.
Oh, yeah.
And I've always had notebooks, and I'll jot something down. And back, this is good when I was on the road all the time. Just that night, I'd incorporate that somewhere into the bit and do it in the show. And if it worked, I kept it. If it didn't, you know, I'd work on it. And it depended on how it didn't work. If the audience was just being jackasses about it and it was funny, but they didn't want to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
If it irritated people, damn sure I was going to do it again.
It's like challenge accepted.
You know, I do that a lot. I was a punk.
I love it. A rebel. Yeah. But what about like the evolution of a joke for you? Like what for you, if you decide, you know, even back then when you were incorporating stuff into your act, like when you were working the road, if you thought of an idea, you jotted it down, you started working it out, how long before you would be like, okay, this is a good enough joke to stay in the act, or you decide, maybe I should put it on the shelf for a while, come back to it, or, you know, any of that?
It would all just vary, man. It would depend on the bit. I've been going through my closets here in my apartment trying to get rid of some stuff, and I came across a stash of some old notebooks, and there was the genesis of a bit that I'd been doing up until, you know, and I was like, wow, it started out with that right there. It's like a little archaeological dig. You find that and go, man, what was I smoking when I wrote that? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
man.
Fun.
I wish I had some of that now.
Yeah, I've definitely looked at some old joke books and just been like, man, I can't believe I even thought that was funny, or you know, or you right? know, been yeah. like, just like, whew,
but you know,
it's rough.
You gotta stretch the boundaries a little bit, don't you? I mean, everybody's got their theories on what comedy is and what comedy's supposed to be about and what comedy's supposed to do, but you know. And all this talk about being canceled, comics being canceled for saying stuff. It was like, you know what? As long as I've been in comedy and as long as I've been watching comedy since I was a little kid, comics say stuff.
Oh,
it's kind of in their job description. Mm-hmm. That it's kind of our job to say stuff. If we didn't, we'd be mimes.
Yeah.
And who wants to be that?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna keep saying stuff.
Gotta keep the mouth running.
See, I wrote that joke specifically for this podcast.
I love it. I'm glad. I love that you went and wrote a joke just for this podcast.
No, it's just, you know, having some place to try something out is very cool to have.
Oh, absolutely. Have you? Because now that you're kind of, you know.
Stewing
it and easing back. Have you done any like stuff online, like some of the, like the Zoom shows or anything like that, or any virtual stuff?
I did a Zoom show with Spencer Dobson during the quarantine. Mm-hmm. And honestly, man, it was weird doing a Zoom show. It was weird. It was kind of like cheating on my mirror.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you mean.
I'm sorry, buddy, but I got all these people in here to talk to.
Yeah, it's weird.
It was weird.
Oh, I agree. It's interesting to me because I've had some comics on the podcast here recently. I had a couple episodes ago, Emily Page was a comic on here, and she started comedy during the pandemic. So she started on Zoom. Zoom open mics, and I know other comics, same thing, they started during the pandemic, and so that was all they knew until things opened back up.
And how can you get a solid 15 minutes if you've never been in front of an audience?
And even in that episode,
it's a different thing
now. We talked about that, about transitioning from virtual comedy to, you know, live comedy, and obviously there was some learning curves, but yeah,
right.
It's an interesting thing to me that people actually started during the pandemic. Because, yeah.
I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, because even as somebody, you know, I did a few virtual shows, and for me, it wasn't the same. It was there, and I didn't do a ton of them because I didn't like it. It just wasn't the same.
No, it just I'm an old curmudgeon now, and it's hard for me to get used to saying, but I had a hard time. I'm a purist. Mm-hmm. I'm a bar comic. I'm a saloon comic. And there needs to be that, it's hard enough for me to get used to not people not smoking in the audience, you know?
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And that's,
I did a show in Wyoming not too long ago. Well, within the last couple of years, and there was a bar, not at the show, but there's another bar that I stopped in where they were smoking in the bar. Blew my mind. Cause I was like,
right on.
I'm like, what? This is a thing? I didn't know this even existed anymore, anywhere.
I think it would send me into respiratory failure if I walked into a place like that.
Yeah, right?
I talk a big game now, but I'm 3 years away from them cigarettes. That's like 15 minutes of my act just gone.
Just up in smoke.
Yeah.
Now, I'm curious, going into, you know, because this is, we talk about bombing and stuff. When you're up on stage... Yep. And you tell a joke and it doesn't land, or you feel like you're losing the crowd in that moment, what goes through your mind and how do you try to deviate?
Well, it's been a long time since I've had that feeling of like, oh my God, I'm losing them. But I know what that, and once again, isn't it different from crowd to crowd, from mm-hmm. situation to situation? How am I losing them? Am I losing them because they didn't like my ponytail joke? Am I losing them because I'm obviously not of their kind? Oh, what, you know what I'm saying?
I know what you mean.
Whatever. I just, you know, you find some anchor, find something. Okay. Maybe this will work. I'm myself. I've got all sorts of things in my pocket that I pull out. Okay. All right, let's try the impressions. Everybody likes the Jimmy Stewart impression. Maybe I can win them with that, you know?
Yeah. That's, it's interesting to me that, I don't know. It's interesting because sometimes you have that situation, and you're right. It really does depend on what's going on in that situation, because there's so many mm-hmm. variables on what can and, you know, can't prevent you from, winning or losing an audience. But
right?
It's interesting because... You know, in that moment, you can tell a joke 9 times and then that one time it doesn't land and you're just like, what? And it just can totally throw you off. You know, so many little things. Like last night, I actually was at a show and a newer comic who I've kind of becoming friends with here in the area that I live in was on the show, and he kind of got heckled, but it wasn't like a rude heckle, but the lady who talked, what she said made no sense. It was not relevant to what he was talking about, and I saw that moment in his face where he just kind of like just didn't know how to react and didn't know how to respond, and then he kind of tailspin from there and kind of started forgetting his jokes because it just threw him off. It like just,
I've been there,
so like out of the blue, he didn't know what to do, and then it just.
Well, that kind of reminds me of my one and only audition for Last Comic Standing. I somehow got myself signed up to audition for it.
Where did you audition? Just out of curiosity.
Chicago.
Okay.
Chicago at Zany's. I called a friend of mine, Sabo, Steve Sabo, booked me at a club in Michigan. You know, to help pay for the trip, you know.
Yep.
But what it turned out being was me driving from Sioux City all the way to this club in Michigan, which was like 6 hours past Chicago or so. Did the show, turned around, drove back to Chicago, met my friend Roy Haber there. And we about 3 o'clock in the morning, we proceeded to wait outside the place for the line to form. And, we were like right up there in front of the line when it started forming and everything. And I could see that on the other side of the door, there was a bunch of comics who I recognized. And it was like, they were all getting in they'd gotten special invitation kind of thing. So I went over to talk to them for a while, and then started realizing there was all these guys in line that I'd opened or that had opened for me on the road, you know, on the small town gigs. And man, I was just getting the greatest vibe off this. It's like, this is mine. I'm feeling too good to lose this, you know? So we end up getting in line, waiting. I can't even remember how long we waited, but it was a long time. It was like hours and hours and hours, like a whole day almost. And the weather got bad. It was freezing and raining, and I was drenched. And we got into Zany's and started warming up, and I felt good. And I got up on stage to do my bit. And the judges, the thing was, say your name, where you're from, and hit it. You're supposed to do three bits. So I got up there, said my name, where I was from. I hit it. I hit my first three bits, and they didn't stop me. And that just threw me. I had a fourth joke. Of course I had a fourth joke.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But all of a sudden, it was just one of those moments where, and the waiting in line got it. I started to feel physically sick. I lost my place. I lost everything. Went blank in my mind. I couldn't think of anything. And I, you know, I just looked down at the judges and went, I'm cold. And I was like, well, Gary, you were talking about cigarette smoking, oddly enough. So when I finished off the thing, and as I was walking off to the door, knowing full well that I had just biffed this shit, you know. I heard the judges talking about it. One of the judges was like, well, I don't know, a lot of those people have been standing outside and in the weather, and they're, you know, feeling pretty sick. And I turned around and said, there's a lot of people standing out there right now, probably getting hypothermia trying to get on your TV show, which did not help my chances of getting, you know, chosen.
Well, you gotta lean into it, I guess, right?
It was a bombing moment, you know.
Do you remember what season you auditioned for? Because that show, first season was really weird.
Let's say I was driving, so it would have been around 2005.
Okay, yeah, I don't remember what season that was.
It would have been March of 2005. I think that was the second year, maybe.
Okay, when it got better.
Maybe. The first season was with
Ralphie May and Dan
Minnesota
Fan.
Comic that I worked. Dave Mordall.
Okay, yeah, I don't remember
first season.
I remember.
I never really watched it.
Yeah, I only remember from the first season. I only remember Ralphie May and Dat Fan, because Dat Fan ended up winning.
Right, right. The first season. He went on a face off with Mordall, and Mordall got up there and just killed it. And then Dat Fan got up there, and I really should shut up because I'd be talking conjecture. But I was watching Mordall just thinking, oh my God, he can't believe he's losing to this.
Yeah. And that was that season too. That first season was weird how they did it. It eventually got a little bit better how they were doing it, but it's neither here nor there because it's gone.
It cemented me in my opinion that comedy contests just aren't for me. I mean, I do that one here in Sioux City because got to do something. But I'm glad I'm not a contestant in it. I don't like being judged.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And it's funny because I kind of had a similar experience to you with an audition, not for Last Comic Standing, but an audition for America's Got Talent, where we were told that. You know, I went to one of those cattle call auditions where you wait around all day and, you know, you hope you're going to get into there. And eventually we did get up to where we got to audition, and they, you know, made it sound like you only get 90 seconds. Like you've got to just.
Yeah.
And so that's what I had planned. And then I got to the end and same thing. They didn't like stop me. And so I stopped and I'm like, do you want me to keep going? Or they're like, yeah, if you want. And I was like, okay. You know, I'm just like, you guys tell me what you want.
You're supposed to be driving.
Yeah. You tell me what I'm supposed to do, and then I will deliver.
Right.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I never had any luck with TV either. You want to talk about bombings? You want another bombing story?
Oh, I'd love to hear one. Oh, we have some time.
I mean, this is like a week-long thing. It was a club in Fort Wayne called Snickers, and this is a long, long time ago. I was featuring... And, dude, you know, I'm realistic about my stand up. I was never going to set the world on fire much, you know, a little hot foot here and there, but nothing, you know, no grass fires, nothing yeah. damaging, you know?
Yeah.
I've been doing really well. And here I was, featuring this full-time club that had a TV show attached to the end of it called Night Shift with Kevin Ferguson. And, it was supposed to be a sweet gig to send me on my next level, you know? Man, I ate it every night,
oh,
every
no.
crowd, just eating it, not being able to figure out, well, really, what the fuck, that one too? You know, it was like, what did I do to you people? You know, who do I look like, you know, in your city history that makes it impossible for you to trust me? But it just sucked all week long. So we get down to the TV show at the end of the week, and it's a talk show style format, and Kevin's the host, and the headliner's got his daughter with him. And anyway, the people that were in charge of this TV show decided to pick all my material for me, what I was going to do. And I kept trying to tell them some of that stuff. I mean, I'm going to be separated from the audience. That's up close kind of stuff. And they were adamant that this is what you're going to do, Mr.
Oh,
you know,
man.
And I, all right. So I said, do you have a guitar stand for my guitar? You know, since you want me to play it? Nope. And they didn't offer me any solutions. So I walked onto the set. I put my guitar against the back wall, leaned it up like, you know, like I've leaned it against walls 1,000 times. I walked down to the stage, and somebody walked into another door on the stage, and a door slammed and my guitar tipped over.
Oh,
this is the beginning
no.
of my set. I'm supposed to end with my Cattleman song. And every joke that they'd picked out for me to do, every joke I had been bombing all week. They wanted me to do it. Ate it. Just ate it. I'm just standing up there on television looking like a complete butz, you know?
Wow. And, was this live? This was a live television?
It was recorded, I think. I think it was recorded.
Okay, but still.
But here we come to the magic part where I usually save myself with my songs because my songs always bailed me out. So I go up and get my guitar, and the tuning pegs had broken off, and the thing was so out of tune. And like a complete idiot, I just went ahead and did one of the songs anyway. it was painfully horrid. I think the VHS still exists somewhere. I might even have it because I think my agent at the time, Ken Muller, gave it to me. But I don't know where the hell it is.
Wow.
I don't want to see it.
Yeah, right.
I think
no doubt.
It would make me go back in time and quit comedy altogether if I had to watch that.
Do you think, though, if you could really go back in time and do that set over again, you probably would have been like, well, I can't play the song because my guitar is broke, and then did something else?
Well, if I had any depth, you know, to change my format right in the middle of the set, you know,
yeah.
maybe. You know, if I go back with the wisdom I have now, there would have been...
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, this has been really amazing. We're going to start wrapping up.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it went fast. Get into this conversation, but
I didn't even get into the big beer in the glass bomb story, which was really what I was trying to do. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Dan. I'll tell you.
Wait,
about it sometime.
What? There's
yeah.
there's another story you're holding on to.
Well, I wasn't actually holding on to it. I was like, it'll come up, but now we're out of time. So,
well,
teaser.
That's a good way to get to try to get to come back.
Hey, look at my Facebook page and try to find it. I think I had it pinned to the top. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I'll get you a copy of it. I wrote something.
Oh wow!
It.
Yeah, definitely.
Last year.
Well, at the end of the show, because we talk about bombing and so many of the bad shows, I like to go out more positive. So you've had an incredible career. You've got to do some incredible things. I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of different things that you've done or whatever. So I just like to hear about a gig that was your favorite. Doesn't necessarily have to be the best gig that you've ever got to do or the biggest opportunity, but just for whatever reason, a gig that was your favorite.
I don't have a favorite, but there are a couple that immediately popped to mind. One was real early on in my career. I was working for a booking agent out of Kansas City called Tim Nass. And he booked me into an outdoor concert that was a welcome home for the troops from the Big Red One after the Gulf War. And he booked me in to be the host, master of ceremonies for this thing. And it was going to be music acts and whatever all day long, all day long until the final headline band, which was a band called Shooting Star. And my job was to introduce all the acts and do my little shtick in between, you know, in between sets, and generally just have fun. And I was outside on one of them big semi-truck stages, you know.
Oh, yep.
And it was fenced off with that orange fence. And it started out, there was nobody out there, very few people. But I started having relationships with people that were sitting down front as I came up there. And then I'd end up giving the acts their plaque. They all got a plaque from the fort down there. And, man, it was just a great time. I was having so much fun that I got down to the, I introduced Shooting Star, and I was walking off the stage, and here comes this general dude and some other people walking on the stage, and they kind of intercept me and bring me up to the front of the stage again. And they present me with my plaque. I get my plaque given to me by this general from the Big Red One right after the, you know, and I'm a veteran too. Yeah. So my heart's a little pitter patter by this anyway, you know. And there was these people that were sitting up front along the snow fence that kept yelling stuff at me. And I was like, finally, I got my plaque. I mean, I just been, you know, honored by a general and some staff of the fort, Ripley. Was it Fort Riley? It's Riley. And anyway, some veteran. What fucking fort was it you played on, Lewis? And these people have been trying to get my attention. I went to the edge of the stage and said, "What are you saying?" And they said, "Do you want a beer?" I was like, "Yeah." So I jumped off the semi stage, jumped over the snow fence. I sat up front and watched Shooting Star with all these soldiers that had just come back from the Big Red One. So yeah, that kind of right up there was one of my favorite things that ever happened, man.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a beautiful story. Yeah. I love that.
That was way cool.
Well, the last question I have is, I have the Art of Bombing Get Pumped playlist. Doesn't have to be a song that gets you pumped to do comedy, just a song that gets you pumped. What's a song that you would, that gets you pumped to do whatever?
Pump It Up, Elvis Costello.
Pump It Up. Perfect. Where can people find you, and what do you want to promote?
Well, there's my ever presence on Facebook. GARIELEWIS is my name. That's GARIELEWIS on Facebook, on Twitter, if anybody's twittering, on Instagram. I've got a Patreon account. All you got to do is put my name in there and you'll find my stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not a merch guy yet.
You have a little YouTube show too, right?
It's called Tea Time of the Socially Distant Soul.
Perfect. Well,
little five minute uplifting thing I started doing during the pandemic. Spencer challenged me to do a push-up challenge for mental health awareness. And I was like, I got to the point where I was like, what are push-ups doing to raise awareness for mental health, man? So I started getting a little bit more honest about my own mental health and things that were happening to all of us during the pandemic. And I ended up doing over a year and a half of them, I think. So,
wow.
Tea Time of the Socially Distant Soul.
I love it. That's a great name, too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thanks, Daniel. I enjoyed it, man. It took long enough.
It's the Art of Bombing.
And that was our conversation with Gary Lewis, fantastic comedian in the Midwest. Been doing great things his whole career. There was a lot of great information in that conversation, I thought, that we're going to be talking about in the bonus, the Between Bombs callbacks. Got some great stuff that will be coming up on Monday. Make sure you check that out, because we're going to be talking about some fun stuff. Like, one of the things that you pointed out that we'll be talking about is recording sets. He started recording sets before you could record sets. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how you can't make everybody laugh, and we're going to talk about trying to recover after you lose your composure on stage. These are all very important topics in comedy. So make sure you tune in Monday to the episode 266 callbacks, you know, between bombs callbacks, where we'll be going more in depth on those topics. But I think we're going to start wrapping things up. We do have a few things that we need to plug before we go. The first thing we got to plug is we're doing a little promotion on the buymeacoffee.com. Would you like to tell people about this promotion, Josh?
Not only do you get to buy us coffee, you also get to fire me. Now, when you do that, Dan is going to fire me on the podcast. He'll give you a shout out and say, hey, such and such person says Josh is fired. So you actually get to do the firing by buying us a cup of coffee. Be sure to let us know that I'm fired. And we'll end the episode with me getting fired. Why don't we do a practice round?
And I just want to add real quick, not only do you get to fire Josh when you buy us a coffee, you get to leave the message that I'm going to fire him. So if you want to say, like, Josh, you just have been a terrible producer. I mean, don't get too mean. That's just all I can think of off the top of my head. But if you want to say something like that, or, you know, Josh, we're tired of your calling back, whatever it might be, or you're, you know, we didn't like how you went to the Congo without forewarning. You're fired, or whatever it might be. That's what you're going to do. You got to write the message. Right. And I'm going to read the message to Josh and fire Josh.
Extra points for having, like, a reference to a really old episode.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Go back, like, 50 episodes and be like, you know, the time. Yeah, and that'll really, that'll make me smile.
Yeah, be very creative with that. If you want to do that, just go to buymeacoffee.com/AOBpod. You can buy us a coffee, leave the message, and then at the end of the next, after we start getting these messages, we're going to start reading them at the end, and Josh is going to be fired every episode, but not by me. He's going to be fired. Well, he's going to be fired by me. Or no, he's going to be fired by you, the listener, through me. I'm going to be the vessel, the messenger on Josh getting fired, but the power is in the people. And before we go, I also want to quick mention, we're starting to put out some more video content on the YouTube channel. Make sure you go check that out. I just released the first full video episode in a long time with Adam Mamawala. You can go watch the video version of that on YouTube. We also have the audio version on YouTube as well. So if YouTube is your preferred way to consume podcasts, go make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel, because we're going to be putting up some of that content out there. Make sure you follow the podcast wherever you listen to the podcast. Share it with your friends. Tell people about it. Get involved. Join the Facebook group. All the information that we just shared with you in your earbuds through into your eardrum to go into your brain is also down in the notes of the show. You can just click the links and we can make it super easy to do that. For me, you can follow me everywhere online, D Bublitz Comedy. All my dates are on my website, danbublitzcomedy.com. Where can people find you, Josh?
JoshShirleyComedy.com. All my social is living right off that. You can find out where I'm going to be next.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of The Art of Bombing. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. Until then, have a great week, and hopefully you'll tune in Monday. Have a great day.
This has been a Dan Bublitz Comedy Production. Roar.